itself, but I just had. George pointed to the bead of melted chocolate ice cream hovering at the rim of my cone.
Your ice cream is about to drip.
Oh. Instead of bringing the cone to my mouth so I could lick it, I watched as the ice cream slid down the outside of the cone toward my fingers. George's hand moved into my field of vision, and one of those impossibly large fingers traced the drip's path up the cone in the opposite direction. He swiped the ice cream with the pad of his finger, then brought it to his mouth and sucked it off. I looked up at him in awe. If anyone else had touched my food, I would have been unable to continue eating. I had a very strict no-touching-my-food policy. But watching George Thompson lick my ice cream drip off his finger did not have the immediate effect of making me want to dump the rest in the garbage. In fact, I had the oddest experience of briefly imagining it had been my mouth sucking that drip of ice cream off George Thompson's finger.
"Sorry," he said, and gave his fingertip another quick suck. "It was going to drip on your hand."
I didn't reply. I couldn't. Seeing this man's naked private parts had not rendered me speechless, but watching him lick ice cream off his finger had. None of this interaction made sense. "That's okay," I managed to say. I forced my gaze back to my ice cream so it stopped staring at George Thompson's mouth and his huge hands.
"Nice to see you again, June."
"It's nice to see you, too," I said, still not looking at him. "Dressed, this time."
"That I am," he said, "although it's too cold not to be. Still, freezing temperatures aren't enough to keep me from enjoying some ice cream. I see we have that in common."
"Apparently we do." I looked up again and noticed he'd also chosen Rocky Road on a sugar cone, although his was piled with two scoops, not one. I was about to point out our similar taste in ice cream as being another commonality we shared when the door opened, letting in a blast of cold air. Misty Lynn Prosser waltzed in. She wore a puffy pink coat with a thick band of fake fur around the collar and a pair of skin-tight jeans. Cassidy and Scarlett hated Misty Lynn. I didn't waste energy on hating her. She was unintelligent and unnecessarily promiscuous, hardly worth anyone's notice as far as I was concerned. Instead of going to the counter to order something, her eyes landed on George. Her lips curled in a predatory smile, and she sashayed over to my table. And suddenly I had a feeling I understood more about why Scarlett and Cassidy hated her.
"Well, hi there," she said,
her greeting clearly meant for George, not me. George's eyes darted to me once, then to Misty Lynn.
"Hi."
"Aren't you a big hunk of man?" she said, openly appraising him. "In town for a visit?"
His brow furrowed, and he leaned slightly away from her.
"Guess so."
"I'm Misty Lynn."
She traced a finger down the zipper of his coat.
"Welcome to Bootleg Springs."
A surge of heat poured through me, and I dug my fingernails into my palm. My ice cream was still melting, but I didn't care. I did not want Misty Lynn to touch George Thompson. "Are you here for ice cream, Misty Lynn?" I asked. "Or something else? I don't think Penny carries nicotine gum. You'll have to get that at the pop-in." She finally looked at me, her expression annoyed, as if she'd been trying to pretend I wasn't here and I'd ruined it by speaking.
"No, I have plenty of gum."
She patted her coat pocket and turned back to George, her smile returning in an instant.
"I was in the mood for something sweet, so I figured I'd stop in."
"That's nice," George said,
and I was not unaware that he still hadn't given her his name. "Good."
"What's that you're having?" she asked.
She reached out toward him again, and I had the strangest desire to fly out of my seat and claw her eyes out. George deftly sidestepped and sat in the chair across from me.
"I'm just having some ice cream with my friend June," he said. "It was nice meeting you."
His dismissal was so obvious, even Misty Lynn understood it. She stared at me,
and her wad of chewed gum almost fell out of her open mouth. I stared back. I didn't have anything else to say to her, so I just waited for her to leave. She pulled the gum back into her mouth with her tongue. With a dramatic roll of her eyes, she spun on her heel and left.
"Now you're really making a mess," George said.
Oh, my ice cream had dripped all over my hand. I hadn't even noticed the cold, sticky drips.
I quickly licked the excess off the cone, then switched it to my other hand.
Before I could grab a napkin, George had my messy hand in his. It looked so tiny nestled in his huge one. With slow strokes, he gently wiped the ice cream off with a napkin. Strange things were happening to my body. The feel of my hand touching his elicited a rush of heat between my legs. How very perplexing. George wasn't doing anything overtly sexual. He was cleaning up the mess I'd made while I'd been in the throes of inexplicable jealousy. Why was this making me feel so tingly? I pulled my hand back. Thank you. Rocky Road ice cream was invented by William Dreyer, one of the founders of Dreyer's Ice Cream. He was reportedly inspired by his business partner's candy. He cut up walnuts and marshmallows with his wife's sewing scissors and added them to chocolate ice cream.
Really?
Yes, it dates to the late 1920s. They named the flavor Rocky Road not long after the stock market crash in 1929. Their intention was to give people something to smile about in the midst of the Great Depression. George licked his ice cream, twisting it across his tongue to get all the way around.
I didn't know that.
I don't know if it worked. I've never come across data that indicates the name Rocky Road or the particular flavor combination increased people's happiness during that time in American history.
I'd be willing to bet it did, at least for some people.
Are you making fun of me?
He held my eyes for a few heartbeats. His brow furrowed.
No. Why would you think I was making fun of you?
Because we don't know each other. Usually people who don't know me find me odd.
I don't find you odd. That was an interesting anecdote about ice cream that I didn't know. And I'd be willing to bet that Rocky Road ice cream made people happy. Then, and now.
He licked his cone again, and I mimicked his movement, swirling the ice cream across my tongue in a slow circle. It was soft and cold in my mouth, the rich chocolate flavor pleasing. Even more pleasing was watching George deliberately lick his ice cream. The persistent jumpy feeling in my stomach increased. Perhaps Penny had put something in this ice cream that didn't agree with my digestion, or it could have been something else I'd eaten in the recent past. I started cataloging everything I'd consumed in the last 24 hours. I'd have to throw away the leftovers I'd planned to have for dinner tonight. I couldn't take a chance on making this strange stomach problem worse. My heart was beating too fast. I swallowed hard, wondering if I was going to be sick. A part of me wanted to stay here with George. Another part wanted to run. I was vaguely aware that I was experiencing an acute stress response. My sympathetic nervous system was activated, releasing hormones into my body that produced the fight-or-flight sensation. But the release of catecholamines, including adrenaline and noradrenaline, was inhibiting my ability to think rationally. "Goodbye," I said, suddenly standing, and rushed out the door before George could say another word. Chapter 6. June. George Thompson had invaded Bootleg Springs. Not literally. He hadn't staged a coup to oust control of the town from Mayor Hornsblatt, and he was only one man. He couldn't actually be in multiple places at once, as invasion would suggest. But it seemed as if he were. It seemed as if he were everywhere. When I made my weekly trip to the library, I'd seen him walking up the sidewalk on the other side of the road. The next day, I'd come into town to pick up a few essentials at the pop-in. He had come out, just as I was about to get out of my car to go in. I'd waited to exit my vehicle until he was out of sight. I'd started keeping a mental log of George Thompson sightings, counting the first time I saw him at Moonshine, our encounter in the hot spring, and eating ice cream with him at Moonshine. The tally stood at 8, 8 times I had seen or talked to George Thompson in the last week. He was very distracting. I drove into town and parked, then did a thorough inspection of my surroundings. Past incidents were a good predictor of future events, which meant the probability I would see him again was high. It seemed as if every time I left my house, there was a George Thompson sighting. Bootleg Springs was a small town, but how was it possible that he was constantly crossing my path? The numbers indicated it was more than coincidence, yet I had no reason to believe there was any intent on his part. I needed to do some deeper research into the science of probability and statistics regarding coincidences. Hesitating another few seconds, I narrowed my eyes and took another hard look around. Gray clouds hung low in the sky, threatening a late winter snow, and the streets were empty. No sign of George. It was probably safe to exit and proceed inside. It was Thursday, so I was meeting Cassidy at Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee. Her work schedule varied, so we didn't meet every week. But when her shifts allowed, we met here on Thursday afternoons. The fact that she still made time for me when she was busy with not only her career but her relationship with Bowie Bodine said a great deal about her character. But Cassidy had always made time for me. I was the older sister, but I knew that in some ways she felt responsible for me. She and Scarlett had always included me in their social gatherings. I knew it had cost them socially to do so, during our teen years in particular. If people had tried to exclude me, Cassidy and Scarlett had been quick to declare they wouldn't participate. Parties, bonfires, nights out. If I wasn't invited, they didn't go. As much as I'd always appreciated their loyalty, I'd never wanted to be a burden. I didn't get along with people with the ease of Cassidy and Scarlett, but our peers had come to accept me, for the most part, or at least had grown accustomed to my presence. It was another reason I had stayed in Bootleg Springs. I fit here, as much as I'd ever fit anywhere, mostly because of my sister. I went inside, casting a glance over my shoulder on the way in. No George. I felt a strange mix of things at not seeing him, and I couldn't understand why I was so confused. Shouldn't I have been relieved? I'd been anxious at the thought of running into him when I came into town. Now that I knew an encounter wasn't imminent, why was I experiencing what felt suspiciously like disappointment? Cassidy was already inside, still dressed in her deputy uniform. I felt a surge of pride for her. She'd worked hard to become a deputy, something she'd wanted her whole life. Upholding the law in a town like Bootleg Springs wasn't always easy, but she was exceedingly proficient at her job. "Hey, Junie," she said when I approached her table. She pushed a mug of steaming hot water toward me. "I got you water for your tea." "Thank you." I ripped open an Earl Grey tea bag and dunked it in the mug. In my head, I started counting down the seconds from 240. Letting tea steep too long would result in an unpleasant bitter flavor. "How's your week going so far?" she asked. I paused for a moment, considering whether I should tell her about George. What was there to tell? That a football player I'd followed for his impressive statistics had come to Bootleg and now I couldn't stop thinking about his hands? Wait, what did his hands have to do with anything? Surely the important information would be the facts. The George sightings I'd experienced over the past week. Why were his enormous hands relevant? And yet here I was, imagining those strong hands, and the way he'd licked my Rocky Road ice cream off his finger. "Junie? You okay?" "What?" I blinked, my eyes coming back into focus. "Yes, I'm fine. I was thinking about something else."
"Yeah? Something good or something bad?"
"Just work," I lied. Why was I lying to my sister? "It's not good or bad. It's essentially neutral."
"All right. You just seem a bit distracted is all. You sure you're okay?"
"I believe so, yes." Except I wasn't. I'd lost count of the seconds my tea needed to steep. I looked down at the swirl of tea brown emanating from the bag, mixing with the clear water. How long had it been? Why had I stopped counting? I could count and think at the same time. What was wrong with me? I dunked my tea bag a few times and tried to judge by the color whether it was ready. I decided it needed an additional 60 seconds and began the countdown again.
I heard there's a famous football player in town, she said. Did you hear about that? Do you know who it is?
George Thompson, known as G.T. Thompson professionally, I said before I could stop myself. 2 Super Bowl wins with Philadelphia, over 10,600 career yards, 82 touchdowns.
Wow, I guess you do know.
Cassidy's eyes lit up, and her mouth turned in a smile. I thought he was one of your favorites. Have you seen him? You should get his autograph.
Why would I want his autograph?
Oh, you know, sometimes fans like to get an autograph as a keepsake. I nodded. Of course I knew that. I had a small sports memorabilia collection at home, mostly things Dad had given me for birthday and Christmas gifts. In fact, one of my favorite items happened to be my Thompson jersey. But the thought of seeking him out, on purpose, sent a flurry of nerves fluttering through my belly. So far, I hadn't been sick, as one would expect after ingesting a harmful strain of bacteria. Perhaps it wasn't food poisoning after all. But if it wasn't an ailment caused by microorganisms, what was the cause of my intermittent stomach upset? Instead of addressing the suggestion that I get an autograph from George, or admitting that I'd already met him several times, I decided to change the subject. How are things at work? I asked.
Mostly great. It's so much better now that Connolly is gone. I don't feel like I have to defend my ability to do my job every day. But the Callie Kendall investigation is tricky.
How so? I asked. The Callie Kendall disappearance had always been a source of mild interest for me, although I didn't share the town's obsession with the mystery. Statistically speaking, it was unlikely we'd ever find out the truth. Not after nearly 13 years.
She took a deep breath. The forensics report on Connie Bodine's car came back. I thought it might shed some light on how she died, whether her accident was really an accident. But Junie, they found fingerprints in her car, and I'm terrified of what's going to happen when word gets out.
They found Callie Kendall's fingerprints, I presume. Her eyes darted around, and she nodded. I blinked, letting this new piece of information sink in. That means Callie was in her car. She nodded.
Most of the prints matched the Bodines, obviously, the parents and the kids, but there were some that didn't match the Bodines, and on a whim, I asked them to run them against Callie's. There were at least 2 that were a match.
No wonder Cassidy looked stressed. Her job and her relationship with Bowie Bodine had intersected on the uncomfortable topic of whether Bowie's father, and perhaps his mother, was involved in Callie's disappearance.
Where were they found? I asked.
Passenger seat. Could there be an alternative explanation that doesn't implicate the Bodines and her disappearance?
It's possible Connie gave her a ride somewhere. You know how bootleg parents are, parenting everyone's kids, not just their own, when they need to. But Scarlett doesn't remember her mom driving Callie anywhere, neither do the others. It's still possible it's a coincidence, but
unlikely.
Right, she said. I talked to Bowie and the rest of the family. They're concerned, of course. I'm trying to keep this quiet so we don't get a media circus every time there's a bit of evidence that pops up.
That's a prudent choice. I took a sip of my tea and nearly spit it out when the door opened and in walked Bowie. But seeing my sister's boyfriend was not the cause of my sudden inability to swallow. Right behind him was George. My eyes widened, and I choked down the hot liquid, trying to suppress a cough. Bowie came straight for our table, his sights naturally set on Cassidy. George wandered up to the counter and appeared to be looking at the menu. He was so tall. I didn't know why his taller-than-average height kept making such a strong impression on me, but it did. And there were those hands. My eyes lingered on them, on his wide palms and thick fingers. He brought one hand up to his chin and slid his thumb along his jaw. I watched, fascinated, as he rubbed his chin, his attention on the menu above the counter. With a start,
My breath caught in my throat, and I tore my gaze away. He hadn't seen me. I needed to get out of here. I scooted my chair back and stood, quickly shouldering my handbag. I have to go.
Don't leave on my account,
Bowie said. He pulled up a chair next to Cassidy and had his hand on her thigh.
I just stopped in for a second. I'm meeting the guys to go fishing.
No apologies necessary, I said, trying to keep my voice low. It took a great deal of willpower not to look at George, but I didn't want Cassidy or Bowie to notice him. I have a work commitment and need to leave.
Do you want to take your tea to go?
Cassidy asked. No. My heart raced and my palms felt clammy. I'll see you both later. Apparently, I was doing an adequate job of hiding my distress. Cassidy didn't seem to notice.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow night.
Yes. Bowie leaned in and whispered something that made Cassidy giggle. I was exceedingly grateful for his distraction. I risked a glance at George. He was ordering. He'd turn any second and...
And what?
See me? Say hello? He had always behaved in a normal fashion. He would probably be friendly. What was wrong with that? Something. Something was wrong with it. And I didn't know what, and that made me desperate to leave. I didn't understand why I was so shaky. My hands trembled, my heart beat too fast, and my belly felt like it was doing somersaults. Moving quickly and hugging the far side of the shop, I kept my eyes on the floor and made my way to the door. I didn't look back to see if George had noticed me. I wasn't sure what I'd do if our eyes met. I'd never been so flustered in my entire life. The cold air hit me as I walked outside, soothing my warm cheeks. I took slow, deep breaths as I walked to my car, trying to regain control of myself. What was wrong with me? Was something about George Thompson enough to elicit this dramatic physical response? Was it his fame? His status as one of my preferred athletes that had me so agitated? Or was it something else? I had no idea.
Chapter 7. George. The cup of coffee I'd picked up at Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee, this town had the best business names, warmed my hands as I walked up the street. The temperature was up a bit today, as if spring might be finding its way to the mountains out here in West Virginia. Even in town, I could hear birds chirping. I checked the time, 5:07. I had some time to kill before I met Shelby for dinner. Wondered what kind of trouble I could get up to on a Thursday afternoon. Although, what I really wondered was what June Tucker was doing. I'd only caught glimpses of her since the Rocky Road encounter. That was by far my new favorite ice cream flavor. Watching June lick ice cream off a cone, I'd take that any day of the week, thank you very much. It was fascinating how that brain of hers could hold on to so much information. Who just walked around, living life, storing the origins of Rocky Road ice cream in her head? She knew my entire career forward and backward, and clearly sports weren't the only thing she could talk about with a tremendous amount of knowledge. Sexy as hell, that's what it was. I dated women I'd considered intelligent, but they didn't hold a candle to June Tucker. She was on another level. My phone rang, so I pulled it out to answer. It was my assistant, Andrea Wilson.
Hey, Andrea, what's up?
Hi, GT, sorry to bug you, but I have a few things.
No problem. How's Mello?
Mello? Oh, the rabbit. She's fine.
You're making sure she has playtime, right? She needs attention.
Yeah, of course. I check on her once a day.
Is she warming up to you?
I guess so,
she said.
You know, I'm not really an animal person, but the rabbit's fine.
Talking about my little fluff ball made me miss her. Send me a picture when you go over there tomorrow, okay? I decided to ignore the frustrated breath Andrea let out. She could be prickly, but she was good at her job, and she'd worked for me for years. She handled everything from my schedule and travel arrangements to dinner reservations to my finances. A lot of players did without an assistant after they hung up their jersey, but it was hard to imagine life without Andrea making sure my shit was together.
What you got for me, Andrea? I've worked out a revised budget and financial analysis for you, yearly projections and so forth. I'll email it to you.
Can you just bottom line it for me?
Sure, between investments and your pension, you should be fine financially. Just don't go out and buy a Lambo or something.
Not much chance of that. What else?
Your physical therapist wants to schedule a follow-up. When do you think you'll be back in town? I'll get that set up for you.
I scratched my chin. I'm not sure, to be honest. I kinda like it here, and the hot springs are no joke. My knee feels better already. The sound of her fingers clicking against a keyboard came through the phone.
Let me know when you have a return date, and I'll get an appointment scheduled.
I hesitated, momentarily distracted by a large green tractor lumbering up the road. The driver parked it in front of a store that said Build-A-Shine and jumped down.
Sounds good. Last thing, and then I'll be out of your hair.
I paused and leaned against a building. A car drove by, its engine considerably quieter than the tractor had been.
Sure. You have a few invites to charity events. One is this week, so I already declined. What about the others? Do you want me to forward them to you and you can decide?
A loud clop, clop, clop caught my attention. A woman on horseback came around a corner. She wore a baseball cap with a big rooster on the front, and she rode that horse up the street like it was totally normal. Then again, I supposed it was normal here.
Sorry, Andrea, I was distracted for a second. Just sit on those for now. I don't want to have to rush home for anything. I need some downtime, and I'd like to keep my options open as far as how long I stay here. Okay.
A chicken strutted up the sidewalk, pecking at the ground like she was looking for a tasty morsel. I laughed.
Sorry, I said. There's a chicken walking up the sidewalk.
Did you say a chicken? She asked.
Where are you?
I chuckled again. Bootleg Springs, and yes, a chicken. She seems friendly. Anyway, I'll talk with you later, Andrea. Thanks for checking in.
You're welcome. I'll email if I have more questions.
Sounds good. I pocketed my phone and watched the chicken as she pecked at the ground a few more times, then scratched.
You finding what you need there, sweetheart? I asked. Are you supposed to be on the streets, or did you get out of your coop?
She's free range. A man with a bushy white mustache stood nearby. He wore a sheriff's uniform complete with a star-shaped badge. His name tag said Sheriff Tucker. I wondered if he was related to June. Looked a bit like her, and in a small town, it seemed likely.
I guess I won't worry about finding her owner then.
Sheriff Tucker shook his head. Nah, no need. This here is Mona Lisa McNugget. She's our town chicken. Doesn't really belong to anyone.
Of course her name was Mona Lisa McNugget. She's a fine-looking hen, Sheriff.
That she is. I hope you don't mind me introducing myself.
He held out a hand.
Harlan Tucker.
I took his hand and gave it a solid shake. Pleasure to meet you, G.T. Thompson.
He cracked a smile as he let my hand drop. Yeah, I have to admit, I know who you are. There's been a bit of buzz in town about you.
I shrugged. That can happen.
Shame about your knee, he said, gesturing to my leg. You had a good 2 more seasons in you.
I'm not so sure about that. 1, more likely, but thanks.
I tell you, that touchdown reception you had against Texas last season was amazing. I think we watched that catch 100 times.
Thanks. You follow football?
Sure do. I'm a sports fan in general, but there's nothing like some good old-fashioned football.
A man on the street caught my attention, and I watched him, my mouth partially open. Long white hair spilled out from beneath a black top hat, and a white beard hung to his belly. He rode down the street on a skateboard, holding a drink of some kind in a mason jar.
Sheriff?
He said, tipping his hat as he passed.
Morris, Sheriff Tucker said. This town was something else. I won't keep you.
Sheriff Tucker patted his pockets like he was looking for something.
But if it wouldn't be too much to ask, I was wondering if I might get your autograph. My daughter is a big fan. I'd love to surprise her.
His daughter? Was she June?
Of course, I'd be happy to. A pickup truck drove up the street, slowing when it came near. Sheriff Tucker put his hands on his hips, watching as the truck came to a stop. Two men sat in the cab, and three were in the bed. I recognized one of the men in the back as Gibson Bodine. The others had to be his brothers, or related somehow. The resemblance was clear. Gibson tipped his chin to me, and I nodded back. I blinked a few times, wondering if I was seeing things. Did they have a barbecue in the back of the truck? They certainly appeared to. The black contraption stood in the center of the bed, and Gibson held a long metal spatula. They couldn't be grilling while they were driving, could they? Afternoon, Sheriff. One of the men in the back nodded to him, looking a little sheepish. I was fairly sure he was the same guy who'd picked up Gibson after he'd almost hit that deer. Bowie, Sheriff Tucker said. He nodded to the others. Boys, what are y'all up to?
Going fishing, Bowie said.
Are you now? Sheriff Tucker asked. That grill isn't on, is it?
The mouth-watering aroma of cooking meat wafted toward us. My stomach rumbled.
Yeah, it's hot,
Gibson said, opening the lid. The meat popped and sizzled.
Boys, you can't be driving around while grilling, Sheriff Tucker said. We've been over this.
It's okay, Sheriff, Bowie said. Jameson welded the grill to the bed for us, so it won't go anywhere.
The man driving leaned over and tipped his cap.
Hey, Sheriff, don't worry, it's secure. We learned our lesson last time.
And here I thought if a few of them had women in their lives, it might settle them down a bit.
Sheriff Tucker muttered under his breath.
Care for one?
Bowie asked, pointing to the meat sizzling on the grill. Sheriff Tucker's expression softened and his nostrils flared like he was taking a good, long sniff.
Well, I suppose I might as well.
The third guy produced a paper plate while Bowie got out a bun. Gibson took a patty off the grill and slid it onto the bun.
Thanks.
Sheriff Tucker took the plate.
Horse pucky, where are my manners, boys? This is G.T. Thompson. Mr. Thompson, these are, well, the Bodines. Most of them are, at least.
He pointed to each of the men in turn.
Gibson, Bowie, and Jonah in the back. In the driver's seat there is Jameson.
He pointed to the man in the passenger seat, the only one who didn't look like he must be related.
And Devlin McAllister. He's their sister Scarlet's beau.
I held up a hand. Nice to meet you.
I thought you looked familiar, Bowie said. Sorry to hear about your knee. What brings you to Bootleg Springs?
The knee, actually. I heard about the hot springs and decided to give it a go. So far, I'm a believer.
Damn right, Gibson said.
Burger?
Bowie asked. I was meeting Shelby soon for dinner, but why the hell not? The food smelled fantastic, and I was a big guy. I could pack away a lot of calories.
Absolutely.
I got my burger on a plate and handed it over.
Thanks. We best be moving on,
Bowie said.
Those fish won't catch themselves.
Don't be spilling charcoal out the back again,
Sheriff Tucker said.
We're way ahead of you, Sheriff, Gibson said. We rigged up a propane tank back here. Well, in that case.
I raised my eyebrows. Somehow driving around with a propane tank didn't seem any safer, but I had to admit, a bunch of guys driving around in a pickup truck grilling hamburgers on their way to going fishing, it was awesome. I liked this town.
Nice to meet you, I said. And thanks for the grub.
Anytime,
Bowie said.
Not Sheriff.
You check in with Cassidy?
Sheriff Tucker asked.
Of course I have,
Bowie said, putting a hand to his chest like he was insulted the sheriff had to ask.
She's with Scarlet tonight.
Fair enough. Careful with that grill.
The truck pulled out onto the street and drove away. Sheriff Tucker shook his head.
My future son-in-law. But Bowie's a good kid. Glad he and my daughter finally got their heads on straight.
Your daughter the football fan?
No, Bowie's with Cassidy, my youngest. The football fan is June.
So he was June's father. I suddenly wanted very much to be in this man's good graces.
Well, like I said, I'd be happy to sign something for her.
He pulled a scrap of paper and a pen out of his pocket.
Wish I had something better, but this'll do.
I signed the piece of paper, taking care to make my signature legible for once, and handed it back.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson,
he said. GT, I said. And no problem. Tell your daughter I said hello.
I'll do that,
he said, smiling so his mustache twitched. I hoped he would, and maybe soon I'd have a chance to see June Tucker again.
Chapter 8. June. An evening at the lookout wasn't typically a cause for anxiety. I didn't mind being here. I could always read or browse ESPN.com on my phone if I was bored. But tonight, I was completely out of sorts. George Thompson was here. His presence in the bar was palpable. It was as if he displaced the air, leaving what was left to press against me, the molecules all fighting for space. Grateful I'd chosen to dress in layers tonight, I took off my cardigan. I couldn't decide if the temperature in the lookout was warmer than usual or if it was me. Or George. Briefly, I contemplated leaving. I'd run out of Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee yesterday to avoid him, but I'd spent the rest of my day in a haze of distraction, trying to unravel the knots in my belly, confused as to why I'd chosen to flee. Although I was feeling a now familiar swirl of nerves, I didn't want to leave. But I wasn't going to go so far as to talk to him either.
Is that him?
Cassidy asked as she sidled up next to me. She gestured with her beer toward George.
The football player?
I was about to answer in the affirmative, but he chose that moment, that precise second, to meet my eyes and smile. It wasn't just a smile. Oh, no. It was a slow spread of his lips, parting across perfect teeth, dimples puckering his cheeks. It was crooked and sexy and utterly disarming. I almost fanned myself, which was so ridiculous I couldn't believe the urge had been mine.
Whoa, Cassidy said.
Yeah. Was that my voice, so breathy and mesmerized?
I take it the answer is yes, Cassidy said. You look a little starstruck, and oh my God, he's coming over here.
He was, indeed. His eyes were locked with mine, that grin still on his face. George Thompson was walking toward me, his 6'5" frame all confidence and grace. I swallowed hard but managed to keep from jumping off my stool and running out the door.
Hey, June, he said. You look very pretty tonight.
Cassidy's eyes were huge, her mouth open. I needed to say something. Hi. That wasn't very good. He'd complimented me. Had he called me pretty? So the appropriate response was, thank you. He kept smiling at me, as if he didn't even notice Cassidy, which was exceedingly odd. Men always noticed Cassidy. She was beautiful and friendly. George didn't know she was in a committed relationship with another man. Why wasn't he turning to her to engage in a stimulating and perhaps flirtatious conversation? Why was he still looking at me?
Would you like to dance?
He asked. My lips parted, but I had no idea what to say. No one ever asked me to dance in the lookout.
Why, yes, she would, Cassidy said.
Before I knew what was happening, Cassidy pulled me off the stool and shoved me at George. I squeaked, my feet getting tangled, and stumbled into him. And then his hands, those gloriously large hands, were on me, keeping me steady, holding me by the waist so I wouldn't fall. I was utterly breathless, unable to speak. I tilted my head back so I could look up at his face. Instead of stepping away and putting a reasonable amount of distance between us, he moved closer, so our bodies almost touched.
You all right?
He asked. I nodded.
Shall we?
He led me out onto the dance floor as a new song began, Tennessee Whiskey. It was a slow song, and people paired off around us, wrapping their arms around each other to slow dance. I don't understand dancing, I said.
You mean you don't know how?
No, this style of dancing doesn't appear to require any particular skill. It's just two people swaying to music. They're barely moving their feet. Other styles of dancing require a great deal of skill and practice. I can see the merit in that. I don't understand the purpose of this. One corner of his mouth hooked upward.
Are you always so logical?
Yes.
Good to know. Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I can tell you why I like dancing.
I kept my eyes on his face, awaiting his explanation.
You know what? It'll be easier if I just show you. Come here.
He slid a hand around my waist and pulled me against him. I sucked in a breath. One hand rested on the small of my back. With his other hand, he took mine and nestled it between us. He started to move, shifting his feet with the slow beat of the music. Leaning down, he rested his stubbly jaw against my temple and spoke softly near my ear.
Now close your eyes.
Why?
Because I'm going to explain dancing. Trust me.
I let my eyes drift closed. Okay.
For starters, the music.
Chris Stapleton got his start.
Hold up there, June, he said. You're thinking too much. Don't think about the artist or the origin of the song. Just feel it. The beat. The way we're moving to it. Don't think. Just feel.
We were moving in time with the slow but steady rhythm. I can feel the music.
Good. Now tell me what else you feel.
Keeping my eyes closed, I focused on the physical sensations I was experiencing. I feel your hand on my back.
He caressed my back in a slow circle. What else?
You're holding my hand, and it's warm.
Mm-hmm.
Tension melted from my shoulders, and I nuzzled my forehead against his scratchy jaw. It was pleasantly rough. I feel your cheek touching my skin.
He slid his jaw against my temple, down my cheek to my ear. You like that?
It is very nice.
You seem surprised.
A little. I felt him smile. It brought to mind the way his cheeks puckered with those dimples.
Do you want to know what I feel?
Yes. His grip on me tightened slightly, his strong arm holding me against him. His thumb traced a little line over the back of the hand he held, and he kept his cheek against my temple.
I feel your body against mine. It's warm and soft in all the right places. I feel the curve of your lower back and the promise of your hips beneath my hand.
I took in a quick breath, my heart beating fast, as he moved his hand down my backside. His palm slid up my hip and returned to its place on the small of my back.
Do you want to know what else?
I nodded. I really wanted to know. He turned his face into my hair and took a deep breath.
You smell fresh and clean, like a meadow on a spring day. I feel your soft skin against my face. Holding you like this makes me wonder what it would feel like if more of our skin was touching.
My breath was shallow, and heat pooled between my legs. I didn't dare open my eyes. It was as if he had me under a spell I didn't want to break.
Should I keep going?
Yes. His voice was gravelly and low, deep and full of suggestion. His warm breath made my skin prickle with goosebumps.
I feel your chest pressing against me, and I wonder if your nipples are hard, what they'd feel like against my tongue. Should I tell you more?
I nodded. I didn't want him to stop. He held me tighter, and there was something there. Something hard and thick and very, very noticeable. Had I been in my right state of mind, I might have commented on the fact that his erection was pressing against me. But I was not in my right state of mind. I was floating on a pillowy cloud of arousal, mesmerized by his hands on me and his deep voice in my ear, heedless of our surroundings.
You smell so good, it makes me think about what you taste like. Your lips and your skin. I feel your body relaxing against mine. This is why I like dancing, June. Because I can hold you like this.
I can think about how good you feel and all the dirty things I'd do to you if I had the chance. I can touch you and smell you, and if I'm lucky, someday, maybe kiss you, taste you. But to everyone watching, we're just dancing.
I think I understand dancing, I said, practically breathless. He smiled against me again. I still hadn't opened my eyes. There was too much to feel. I didn't want the distraction of visual stimulation to get in the way of all this tactile sensation. His body was hard, masculine, and well-muscled. I hadn't even thought about the way he smelled until he'd mentioned scent. Smell had a powerful effect on the brain, and he was lighting up places I hadn't realized were there. I was filled with his woodsy, clean scent. Neurons fired like fireworks over the lake, producing explosions of sensation. My spine tingled and my heart pounded. We swayed in silence as the song came to an end. His cheek still rested against my head, and he held my hand tucked against his chest. Reluctantly, I opened my eyes. It was like coming awake after a vivid dream. The world seemed hazy and indistinct. Another song began, a song with a faster beat, and George led me to the side of the dance floor.
"Thank you for the dance."
He still had my hand in his, and he brought it up to his lips, kissed the backs of my fingers.
"Thank you. That was..."
He raised his eyebrows, waiting for me to finish.
"It was very stimulating."
That grin was back, slow and sexy and distracting.
"Good. I thought so, too. Can I buy you a drink?"
I blinked at him in surprise.
"Is that a yes or a no?"
he asked.
"Why?"
"Why do I want to buy you a drink?"
"Buying a woman a drink is a customary action in human mating rituals."
"Hmm,"
he said, tilting his head. He actually looked interested. Most people listened to me, then moved on with the conversation when I was finished speaking.
"I suppose you're right. Is that a problem?"
"Well, no."
"Don't worry, June. I'm not the kind of man who'll push his human mating rituals too far. I like to feel things out first. I enjoy dancing with you, and I like talking to you. We're in a bar, so my next logical move is to buy you a drink so we can sit and talk more. That sounds nice to me. If it sounds nice to you, say yes."
"Yes."
He smiled again, and it made my legs feel shaky and unstable.
"Good. What can I get you?"
"A bourbon bliss."
"I would not have pegged you as a bourbon drinker, but I like it. One bourbon bliss coming up."
There was a small table with two stools a few steps from where I stood. I sat and waited for George to come back with my drink. Cassidy and Scarlet were across the bar watching me. They leaned their heads together and spoke, their faces animated. Scarlet pointed at me and Cassidy batted her arm down. I turned my gaze away from them. I didn't like being the object of their scrutiny, but I didn't blame them. I never danced, and men never bought me drinks at the lookout. This was wholly uncharted territory for all of us. A few moments later, George returned with my drink. I noticed Nicolette behind the bar watching me too. She winked, and I looked away, tucking my hair behind my ear. George slid my drink across the table and sat on the other stool. His drink appeared identical to mine, and he brought it to his mouth to sip. I couldn't stop staring at him, at his mouth, and his dimples, at his broad shoulders and thick chest, his long arms and strong hands. He set his glass down.
"This is good."
I took a drink, needing a second to collect myself. I never drank to excess, but you didn't grow up in a town like Bootleg Springs and not develop an appreciation for alcoholic beverages. "This is generally my drink of choice. I also appreciate good moonshine, particularly of the apple pie variety."
"I don't think I've ever had the pleasure of apple pie moonshine."
"It's quite remarkable when crafted properly."
"It sounds like it. Does it really taste like apple pie?"
"It does. Moonshine is generally a harsh-tasting beverage. Early on, distillers started adding things to make it more palatable. Apple pie moonshine is generally regarded as the oldest moonshine recipe in this region." He took another sip.
"Interesting.
Bootleg Springs is something of an anomaly. The majority of West Virginia was in favor of prohibition. In fact, some communities had prohibition laws that predate the 18th Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Sounds like you bootleggers prefer to live by your own rules.
In many ways, that is accurate, yes.
I like it here. It's a nice town.
He reached across the table and traced his finger across the back of my hand.
But tell me more about you.
It was hard to think when he was touching me, even with just the pad of his finger. What do you want to know?
How about, what do you do for a living?
I'm an actuary. I work as a consultant for a number of large companies.
You must work from home, then?
I nodded, and he didn't stop caressing my hand. Yes, it's an arrangement that suits all parties.
And what do you like to do for fun?
Watch sports. That made him smile again.
Like football?
Yes, although I'm happy to watch a variety of sporting events.
Because you like to follow the statistics.
Precisely.
I gotta tell you, June Tucker, you are simply fascinating.
I wasn't sure how to respond to that. This was a brand of male attention I so rarely received. The last man I'd dated had been much like me, logical, with an affinity for numbers. We'd met at work when I'd been in Baltimore for a conference. Although I'd thought we had enough in common to sustain a relationship, things had fallen flat. That was 2 years ago, and I hadn't bothered with an intimate relationship since.
Am I being too aggressive for you?
George asked.
You are touching me a lot.
He kept caressing the back of my hand.
Would you like me to stop?
No.
I told you, June, I like to feel things out, but I figure I can get away with some touching on our second date.
Second date? We haven't had a first date.
Sure we did. We had ice cream together.
I would disagree with your label of date.
On what grounds?
He asked.
We sat together and enjoyed a conversation over dessert. That sounds like a date to me.
A date requires both parties to be in agreement as to the intent of the encounter.
In other words, I didn't ask you first, so it couldn't be a date.
I nodded. Yes.
All right. So tell me this. Can an encounter that was not agreed upon ahead of time as being a date become a date?
I had to ponder that for a moment. His hand was still on mine, more or less holding it now. And the tactile sensations were vying for attention with the thoughts in my brain, and winning. Yes, I suppose that's possible, depending upon the circumstances.
So one can make the argument that this is now a date.
This?
Yes, this. You and me, here tonight. I didn't ask you ahead of time, but I did buy you a drink.
I had to concede this was very date-like. Yes, it could be considered a date, but why the preoccupation with labeling?
No reason, really. I'm hoping you'll say yes to another one, though.
Another date? He grinned.
Yes, another date. With me. Are you free tomorrow?
Was this really happening? Was George Thompson asking me out on an actual date? Tomorrow was Saturday, and under usual circumstances, I'd be... I'm free.
So that's a yes?
You really want to go out on a date with me?
He picked up my hand and brought it to his lips again, kissing the backs of my fingers.
I absolutely want to take you out on a date. I wouldn't have asked if I didn't.
Then, yes. I gazed into his brown eyes, feeling a little dazed and dumbstruck. We'd met on several occasions now and had multiple chances for conversation. And he still wanted to take me out on a date. Why? I really didn't know. But maybe, just maybe, George Thompson liked me for me. Chapter 9, June. My dad was prompt as usual. He'd texted earlier to ask if he could stop by at 6:30, and at precisely 6:29 he knocked.
Hi, June Bug,
he said when I opened the door. He came in and gave me a hug. Hi, Dad. I had 30 minutes before George would be here to pick me up.
I felt a little nauseated and wondered if I should cancel. Putting a hand to my forehead, I estimated my temperature. It felt normal.
You all right?
Dad asked. Yes, I'm fine. I led Dad into the living room and we both sat on the couch. You said you had something for me? He smiled and handed me an envelope.
Go ahead.
I opened it and pulled out a piece of paper. Turning it over, I found a familiar signature. G. T. Thompson. But he'd signed it George Thompson. Dad's grin widened.
I ran into G. T. Thompson in town. Did you know he's here in Bootleg? I admit I might have looked for a chance to approach him. I asked if he'd signed something. Told him my daughter was a fan.
I was touched. Dad had given me autographed memorabilia before, but those were things he'd ordered for me. This was different. Although I'd already met George, Dad didn't know that, and he'd gone out of his way to do this for me. It was very thoughtful. But expressing my emotions was not one of my better skills. I wasn't sure what to say. Thank you, Dad.
I wish I'd had something better, like a football or one of his jerseys, but I figured I ought to get his autograph while I had the chance. I don't know how long he's in town for or whether I'll run into him again.
If you stay long enough, you'll meet him again tonight, I said. He's taking me out on a date. I didn't think I'd ever seen my dad look so utterly shocked. His eyes widened, his pupils dilating, and his mouth opened. I hesitated for a second, but he didn't speak. There was another knock on the door. Cassidy came in without waiting for me to answer. Her arms were loaded down with bags, and she had clothing slung over one arm. Hey, Junie, she said with a bright smile. Oh, hi, Dad. June, what are you doing? You should be getting ready. I meant to be here half an hour ago, but, well, let's just say I got held up. Dad groaned.
Oh, Lordy.
Meant to be here for what? I asked.
To help you get ready, of course.
She glanced at Dad.
Is he okay? He looks like he swallowed a bug. Did she say date?
Dad asked.
You have a date with G.T. Thompson?
She sure does. Cassidy put her load down on an armchair. Now, Daddy, you know I love you, but there's some serious girl stuff that's about to happen here.
Since when do you know G.T. Thompson?
He asked, apparently ignoring Cassidy's girl stuff warning. I've met George several times, I said, culminating in an encounter at the lookout last night. By encounter, she means he flirted with her like crazy, danced with her, bought her a drink, and then asked her on a date tonight, Cassidy said. And he'll be here in less than half an hour. That's not much time to get you ready.
I'll be, Dad said, shaking his head. All right, girls, I think I'll get out of your way.
He muttered something else, but I was starting to feel a little dizzy. All this talk of George and dates and girl stuff was making my heart race. Thanks, Dad. He gave me a quick peck on the cheek, then hugged Cassidy.
Have a nice time tonight, Junebug. Good night, girls.
I watched him go, feeling shaky. Okay, first, outfit, Cassidy said, apparently unaware of my current state of distress. Where's he taking you? I actually don't know.
That's okay. He's picking you up at 7, so that must mean dinner. It's chilly out tonight, but it might be warm wherever you go eat.
We'll do layers. She dug through the clothes she'd brought.
I have this adorable sweater I got from Liam A. If you wear a shirt underneath, you could take it off if you get too warm, or if, you know, you want to get frisky.
Why do I need to change? I asked, looking down at my current attire. I was wearing a white blouse and dark gray cardigan with a pair of black pants. It seemed suitable for a date. Cassidy looked me up and down.
You look fine, but I think we can do better than that.
Why?
Come on, Junie, this is a big deal. When was the last time you had a date?
It only took me a second to do the math. It's been 742 days. Her eyes flicked up to the ceiling like she was thinking.
So, just over 2 years? Who were you dating 2 years ago?
Michael Morgan, I said.
She groaned. Oh, I remember him. Although I don't think we ever met him, did we?
No, he lived in Baltimore, and our relationship never progressed to the point of introducing him to family.
He was a jackass anyway.
What leads you to the conclusion that he was a jackass?
He broke up with you, didn't he?
Yes, the choice to end our relationship was his. She nodded once.
Then he's a jackass. Most of them are. But I don't know, Junebug. I think you might have found one of the good ones.
That made me smile a little, although the pleasant feeling was tempered by the persistent roiling in my stomach. I might have to cancel, I said.
Why? Cassidy asked. What's wrong?
I think I contracted a viral infection, or perhaps ingested something that was contaminated with harmful bacteria.
What makes you think that?
I pressed my hand to my belly. I keep experiencing intermittent bouts of stomach upset.
Cassidy grinned.
Why was she smiling? Illness wasn't an amusing matter.
Tell me something. When did you first start getting an upset tummy?
8 days ago.
Uh-huh. And what else happened 8 days ago?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Is it possible that it has something to do with seeing or thinking about a certain tall, attractive football player?
I was about to refute her claim, but I found that I couldn't. Every incident of feeling sick coincided with seeing or thinking about George. That was peculiar.
I'm guessing the look on your face means I'm right, she said. I think you have a crush.
A crush? I've never had a crush before.
No, Cassidy asked.
No one ever made your knees a little weak and butterflies flapped their wings all through your tummy?
Butterflies couldn't survive in the acidic environment of the human gut.
She laughed.
I know, silly. It's an expression. I realize it's not literal. I'm just pointing out that...
Junie, stop trying to change the subject. I took a deep breath.
Does having a crush mean your stomach feels like it's turning upside down and your heart beats faster than your level of physical exertion could account for?
Yes.
And your facial capillaries fill with blood, resulting in warmth and redness?
You blush, yeah. Have you been experiencing those things?
I nodded, almost afraid to admit it.
Then, Junebug, you have a good old-fashioned crush on G.T. Thompson.
Was she right? Was that what was wrong with me? I had a crush on George? The intense whirl of emotions was too overwhelming for me to process. I pulled away from it, mentally distancing myself from the feelings I was experiencing. It was almost as if I could see them, a jumbled mass of colors, like a thick ball of multicolored yarn. Part of me couldn't understand why people put themselves through this on purpose. The anxiety and fear involved in the human pairing process was unpleasant. But it was also exhilarating. Alongside my nervousness for the evening was a sense of anticipation, a tingle of excitement at the thought of seeing George again soon. The memory of his lips brushing the backs of my fingers was still fresh, and I found myself gazing down at my hand. He'd touched this hand, held it, kissed it lightly, and I'd enjoyed it very much. June, I'm sorry, what did you say?
Cassidy smiled again. I said, I know you're probably nervous, but you don't need to be. And you also need to let me do your makeup.
I don't wear makeup.
Just a little.
She clasped her hands to her chest.
Please, Junebug, pretty please, with a heaping pile of sugar and a cherry on top.
In most other animal species, it's the males who are expected to impress the females with displays of physical attractiveness. From an evolutionary standpoint, it makes more sense for the male to be adorned with features that render them beautiful as a means of attracting a mate, and for females to possess traits that allow them to better protect their young.
Well, we ain't peacocks. So how about you let me at you with a little eyeliner?
All right. But not too much. She clapped and squealed. The front door opened, and Jonah came inside.
Hey, what are you girls up to?
I'm helping June get ready for a date.
A date? Good for you, Junie.
What about you, Jonah? Cassidy asked, raising her eyebrows.
Plans tonight? No, no plans.
He jerked his thumb toward the stairs.
I'm going to go shower.
Cassidy looked like she might say something else, but she closed her mouth. She narrowed her eyes as Jonah walked upstairs.
We need to get that man a date.
We, as in me and you, because I think Scarlett is more suited to matchmaking activities than I am.
I meant generic we, she said. Scarlett's already muttering about him still being single. Do you think he's out here mending a broken heart or something? Has he said anything to you?
He hasn't shared many details of his life before bootleg, I said. She said, crossing her arms.
He's a tough nut to crack, that one. We'll get to him, though.
For now, sit your cute self down so I can get started. She sat me down at the dining table and after a lot of instructions, look up, look down, part your lips, rub them together. She stepped back and nodded.
You're gorgeous. Go look.
I went into the bathroom and flicked on the light. Slowly, I looked up into the mirror. That fluttery feeling in my tummy was back as I looked at myself. She hadn't used very much makeup, and the colors appeared remarkably natural. I still looked like myself.